Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're returning to a sensitive topic. So if you have young kids nearby, please get them occupied elsewhere for a little bit. Because Luke Gilkerson from Covenant Eyes is back with us today to talk about protecting our children from online pornography. Before we get started, let me mention Covenant Eyes is a company founded by a dad who was concerned about preserving his kids' purity and integrity as they navigated the minefield that is the internet. So he created a filtering and accountability software to do just that. Our guest again is Luke Gilkerson, the general editor and primary author of the Covenant Eyes blog. If you missed any of yesterday's conversation, you can go to drjamesdobson.org and listen in or download the broadcast when you've got a moment. But let's go ahead and jump in. Luke, the topic we're covering today is a tough one. And I know part one was kind of rough and may have left parents feeling a little anxious, a little fear. And we tried to end by taking some of that away. But I do appreciate you being back for another day.
Thank you so much for having me back, Ryan.
Absolutely. Hey, let's talk about what pornography does to children. You know, when we're talking about that, what does it do to a child's mind to look at pornography at a young age?
Well, that's a good question. When you look at some of the research on this, and just kind of speak of the kind of a high-level view, when a child sees pornography, what they're doing is they're actually forming and shaping their sexual beliefs. So that's on a psychological level, there's a number of things we can say. That over time, there's an exaggerated perception of sexual activity in society and what sexual activity in society really looks like, a belief that promiscuity is in fact, the natural state of things, that there's a sort of a frustration with the idea of monogamy or marriage. Instead, there's more attraction to the idea of casual sex and the idea and sort of even a cynicism about love or the need for affection between sexual partners, especially when you consider the type of material they're watching, right? We are not just talking about still photos of you know, like a swimsuit, you know, just some sort of a swimsuit edition photos or something like that hanging up on a wall somewhere, or calendar girls or something. We're talking about graphic visual pornography that is often highly degrading. I mean, in the top selling, this is just interesting statistic, in the top selling pornography films in a given year, half of the scenes in all of those films contain verbal abuse. So name calling, that kind of thing, where there's verbal abuse going on during a sexual act. Over nearly 90% of them contain acts of physical abuse. These are just scenes, right? So if there's 100 scenes in a given movie, 90 of them are going to contain physical abuse during the sexual actions. So this is the type of material that's available, right? And this is sort of the attraction. This is what they're wiring themselves for.
You know, Luke, you and I, we have kids. In fact, all your kids are a little older than mine. I've got a 1.5-year-old and a 6-year-old, and you've got 2-year-old twins. And am I getting this right, a 4-year-old and a 9-year-old?
That's correct,
Yeah, so you're preparing for this in the same way that I am and in the same way that a lot of our listeners are. So as a parent, what are you doing and what will you be doing to protect your kids? Because, you know, again, we're not saying shut the internet off. That would that would put your kids at an unfair disadvantage in their scholastic activities and other things. But we do need to protect them.
Sure. No, I mean, certainly it starts with basic protections in place. Knowing the parental controls of a specific device and knowing how and when they can access the internet. Being able to set time limits and those sort of things, all of which can be controlled through either parental controls or through good internet safety software like Covenant Eyes. You can set a lot of those limits, and you can the big one, monitoring, is accountability. Holding your child accountable and letting them know you're holding them accountable. So, for instance, this applies mostly to my 9-year-old right now, where he's certainly more cognizant of these things. He knows that Covenant Eyes is installed on the iPad he uses, on the laptop that he uses, and he uses these things every day, and sometimes for many hours, because he'll be doing either some sort of, he's homeschooled, so he's doing a lot of educational type activities on the computer. He knows that Covenant Eyes is located on these things, and he knows that I get a report every single week of everywhere that he goes.
Yeah.
If something questionable shows up, generally speaking, things are going to be blocked if they're, you know, in the black. If they're really, if this is a bad website, it's going to be blocked anyway.
Sure, there's a higher percentage of websites have a higher percentage of objectionable material, and so that's going to be blocked. But I like what you said. Your son knows that Covenant Eyes is installed on his laptop, his computer, his tablet. He understands that because you've talked to him and you've said, "This is on here." So we'll get a report if you're going to areas that you shouldn't be going to. That communication is very important. Talk about that to parents, saying your kids need to know. Yesterday I said 77% of teens say they don't believe their parents are monitoring their behavior online. But the real study is of that 77, 42% of those parents say they actually do monitor where their kids are on the internet, but they don't tell them, which means the whole attitude or idea of spying and distrust or broken trust comes into play of, I was actually going through your stuff when you weren't here. And that says a negative thing to kids. Your kids know that it's there.
Right. And I think this is it's certainly a lot easier to implement when your children are younger, because they need to grow up in sort of this culture of accountability in the home, that they understand that this is simply what we do around here. This is we watch each other's backs. The first thing I tell parents is do not target your children alone for this kind of thing. If you're going to use it in your house, use it for yourself primarily, and then use it for the rest of your kids. Mm-hmm. So that means they need to see not only that when they get on the laptop or when they get on the tablet, or when they get on the smartphone or whatever, that they're being monitored. They need to see that dad is being monitored too. They need to see that mom is being monitored. It's not about targeting your kids and telling them, well, because you're a kid or because you're a teenager, I'm keeping an eye on you. Mm-hmm. It's not that. It's because we're sinners. And all that includes all of us in this household. We're all susceptible to temptation. We're all weak.
Sure.
We're all capable of falling, which means dad has his report and he sends it to mom, or he sends it to his friend at church, or he sends it to his elder, her pastor. It means mom is monitored too, and she has a report that goes to dad or whoever. And then, of course, you as kids in our home, we receive your reports too, because we're trying to make sure that we're all staying honest about where we're going online and what we're doing.
Right.
And it's just way too easy when you have a backdoor pass to anywhere in the world to see anything you want through a computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just way too easy to let that instantaneous access to something that is so tempting become this quick glance, and then the next time it's not so quick, and the next time it's a little longer, or it goes up to it just a little deeper. It's just so easy. That is a path that is just so easy to take, and any of us can take it. And we, instead of doing that, we're going to stop that when it's small. We're going to notice it when the problem is minuscule.
Right.
And we're going to deal with it then.
Mm-hmm. Luke, now, what about the family? Because there's a lot of families listening right now. They're saying, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to put the software on.
Mm-hmm.
What about the parent that's listening that says, hey, we've not done this, but I'd like to start this, but their child is 16. They've not been accountable before. They've not had this software. They're going to protest. Let's be honest.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think part of it is admitting where you have either through a lack of information or knowledge or a lack of real motivation have failed to do this. I think that's a good start, and that's a hard pill to swallow for any parent regarding any issue.
Yeah.
Admitting to our children where we have not measured up, and that's just a good practice to get into anyway. As a parent, is admitting to being able to admit to your children when you've not really measured up to what you need to do. So start with saying, you know, this is something I should have been doing a lot longer ago. I should have either known about this, I'd wish I'd known about this, or you know, I'd heard about this, but I really just kind of put it off. And so admit that. Say, this is something that I've not done before and I should have. And then to more or less kind of step up and be the parent in this area. If a child protests and says, well, you're just doing this because you don't trust me. And then I would say, you're right, I don't, and neither should you trust yourself.
Right.
I don't trust myself. You know, that this has got to come not from a standpoint of you as the teen or you as the child have displayed untrustworthy behavior, and therefore I'm punishing you with this monitoring system, this sort of big brother system. That's not the attitude we bring to it at all.
Yeah.
It is, as people, as human beings, as sinners, we are not trustworthy. We don't approach ourselves that way. We approach ourselves as sin is around the next corner,
mm-hmm.
and we are all temptable. And when we approach with that attitude, we say, yes, this is something we want to do because we want to make sure we're watching each other's backs. But take the example of someone who's this is what I love about accountability. Accountability naturally grows with your child, so you can give your child longer and longer leashes with this stuff. So when they're 10, you have a filtering program on there that's blocking access to certain things. Maybe when they're 12, that filtering becomes a little less sensitive. Or when they're 13, it means they can go to sites that are maybe more types of social networking sites or something like that. And then you loosen the reins a little bit more as they get a little older. But all the while you're monitoring, all the while you're keeping them accountable, all mm-hmm. the while you're helping them. And if you see something questionable on there, you talk about it. So you say, hey, I know you used to watch this YouTube video the other day, and it contained these questionable lyrics in it. Or it contained this questionable material, or maybe something that was overtly sexual or something like that. Maybe not pornography. Maybe it's not this overt kind of crazy, out there pornography, but it's something that is just this, it's this worldly message.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at that and you say, I noticed you saw this video. What did you think about that? It's like sitting down and watching a TV show or a movie with your child. And there's something questionable, a questionable message that yeah. comes through in the plot, comes out. And instead of just letting it go and letting them be entertained by it, either at that moment or at the end of the movie or something, you say, what did you think the message of that film was? Or what did you think the message of that scene was? Being critical and helping them see those things
mm-hmm.
and doing the same thing we would do for movies and television and apply it to online media as well.
Yeah,
and the
right.
report is what enables you to do that.
Definitely. Definitely. It will. And, we talked about Facebook a little bit there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I need parents to hear, I'm not saying the internet is bad.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, I'm not saying my truck is bad, but I want my kids to wear seatbelts while we're driving. And
right.
I want them to obey traffic laws when they're driving. I want to prepare them for that.
Right.
Because people get killed driving cars. I'd rather lessen that chance. We talk about Facebook. It's supposed to be 13 before you can have a public page.
Yep.
Half of the parents of kids 12 and under say their kids not only have a Facebook page,
right.
But that a number, 3/4 of those parents helped their kids create their Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And people go, oh, come on, though. It's Facebook. It's not that big of a deal. Well, 40% of teens have seen pictures on social networks of their friends getting drunk, passed out, or using drugs. And half of these saw those photos at 13 or younger.
Right.
That's what we're talking about. Is Facebook in and of itself bad? No. That's
right.
a large part of how we communicate this broadcast and communicate the teachings of Family
right.
Talk and of my dad. It's not bad, but you need to use it properly.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is... And I think Facebook is a great example. This is material that is created by users. So if you would let your child into a big room where people are having adult conversations about sexuality,
mm-hmm.
This is just picture a big room where all these different adult situations, adult media and adult conversations are going on. There's a lot of this conversation happening. Would you let your child into that kind of room to do that? Well, many would not.
Of course not. Most wouldn't. Yeah.
Right. And so you would guard that.
Yep.
In the same way, you want to be sure that the social experiences your children are having on the internet have the same degree of control. So
mm-hmm.
do you know the privacy settings in a specific thing? Do you know who your kids' friends are? Are you friends with your kids? Are you keeping track of those things?
Yeah.
And I know there's plenty of information out there. I mean, I don't think it's a good idea to be overbearing on this stuff at all. I think parents who are hyper-vigilant about these things can make a lot of mistakes in the other direction, too.
Yeah.
It's about being intentional about knowing where your kids are at and knowing when to speak up about stuff.
Definitely. Like, well, if a parent is trying to, you know, institute accountability software, things like that, and this brings up the question with their 16-year-old who has already been looking at pornography, they discover it either through the software or through conversations with their kids, and now they realize one of their kids has been looking at porn. How should they talk to their child about that? Because it's been hidden already. It's been hidden, and now it's out in the open, and so we got to talk about it. Yeah. I know you have a lot of help on your website. We're going to have that linked on ours after the program today. But for the parent that knows this is going on, what do they say?
That's a huge topic. And, of course, every case is going to be different. There's a lot to be said. But let's just talk about that initial conversation, because what happens after that initial conversation is going to be based on what happens in that conversation. But that initial conversation, the first thing I'd say is don't flip out. So by don't flip out, I mean wait. Wait to have that conversation for a day or two until you've had time to process the information, to know what's going on, to know, you know, for sure what's happening. So if you see a track record of information that's coming through on a Covenant Eyes report or on a search history or something like that, that you're looking at all that information, that you're able to sit down with your spouse, talk about it, pray about it, decide how you're going to approach it. Do not, you know, the minute you get it, burst into the room and begin to, you know, just lambaste your child with this information.
Good advice. You want to
pause and think and pray and think about how you're going to deal with this. That's the first thing. Second thing I'd say is for that first conversation, the more information you have about it, the better. Because if you talk to your child about this, you can pretty much guarantee you're going to hear the phrase, "I don't know," about 50 times. Right. So if you're saying, well, what did you look at? I don't know. And why have you been looking at this? I don't know. And how long have you been doing? I don't know. Like you're going to get that over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Instead of approaching with these very, very open-ended questions, the more information you have, to be specific, the better. So, for instance, if you're able to know what the kind of stuff they've been searching for on the Internet, it'll give you, and our Covenant Eyes report will tell you that, if you know the kind of stuff they're searching for, it might give you a clue. They type in the word cheerleader. You know, maybe they have a crush on a cheerleader at school. Okay, well, maybe.
Yeah.
You don't know that until you figure it out. But, all right, well, that's something to think about. Or maybe there's a certain word, and they heard it somewhere. And, you know, there's a phrase that they latched onto, and they were, out of curiosity, wanted to know more about that. And try, more than anything, try to get to the heart of understanding your child. Not trying to just, don't just see the problem. Don't just see the child as, this is the problem we're going to fix.
Yeah.
It's see the child first. See the child and what they're going through. See that as a window into the curiosities and the struggles of your child and help them to kind of peel those things away. Because ultimately, the goal in all of this is not just to get them to stop looking at porn. Mm-hmm. That is a side effect, or that will be the result of doing good parenting and helping to get to the heart of your children. What are their questions? What are their curiosities? And what's really going on? You know, for anybody, it could be a deeply felt insecurity. Maybe they've had this incredible, urge to look at pornography, maybe perhaps for years, and you don't know about it. You didn't know this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really been driving it all along, I mean, it's not just more than just sin, but what has shaped this kind of sin in their life is this deeply felt insecurity that, girls don't like them, boys don't like them, something, you know, they can't measure up. And so now they're retreating into this world of pornography because it's the place where they can feel some sort of parity of affection in their life. Well, knowing that or trying to get to the heart of that, and that's just one example of a trigger. But knowing that or having a picture of that and knowing going into it with that kind of information helps much more productive conversations with your kids. So for that initial conversation, I say knowing more information is good. Waiting to have the conversation is good. If you do those two things, if you come in armed with more information and with a prayerful, charitable, gracious attitude, I think that conversation could go a lot better than just flying into the room with, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, honestly, though, the biggest stumbling block, or the biggest problem for parents in this, is their own fear of talking about it at all.
Of course,
They don't want to do. They don't want to broach these subjects because a lot of times they don't want to broach subjects of sexuality.
Right.
Some parents, they don't know what to do with their own past in this. You know, they may have a porn past or a promiscuous past or something like that, and they know the minute they open these can of worms and they start dealing with this stuff, their child's going to ask them, well, have you seen this stuff before? Or, you know, how have you dealt with this before?
And maybe wait to have that conversation until you have an answer for that. This is something that parents are going
to
learn from as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Parents are going to learn from
this. And so this is going to be, if this is the situation that parents are dealing with, so they know their child's been looking at pornography, perhaps on even a repeated basis or an ongoing basis, they need to be prepared for the fact that this is not going to just stretch their child. In terms of the conversation that are going to be had. This is not just going to be a growing experience for their child. This is going to be a growing experience for the whole family.
Definitely.
And they have to embrace that, and they have to say, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
We're going to grow in this, and we're going to deal with this.
And it's not an overnight thing. This won't get solved.
No, it's not.
One conversation.
Your first initial conversation has to be seen as an initial conversation and not as, well, once we have this now, we can kind of sweep this under the rug and we'll just pretend all this stuff never happened.
Sure.
No, we want to come back to this again and again. And we want to do this in a way that's loving, speaking the truth in love to the child and really helping them to understand. This is huge. How do you help to them, and you know, we'll have information on our website about this.
Oh, yeah.
How do you help contextualize pornography in the context of what it is parodying, what is it trying to mimic? Because the child is seeking for something in pornography that, granted, they're going about this in a very sinful way, but there's something that they're grabbing at in pornography that taps into some things in them that are actually very, very good. They desire intimacy.
Yeah,
They desire things, and there's a lot of motivations behind pornography for sure.
Sure, sure.
But they desire things that porn is only trying to parody. And so, if you can get to some of the hearts of those things, and help them see how Christ comes to redeem those things in them, to redeem those drives in them, how Christ comes to make those things beautiful, and if you can be equipped with that information, I mean, that's a big subject. I mean, there's whole books written on that, right? But know that that's what you're in for.
Yeah.
And that's what you're in for regardless of whether your child looked at pornography or not.
Yeah.
Those are conversations parents need to have with their kids regardless. It's just that with the pornography thing, it's bubbled those things to the surface, and now they have to be dealt with in a more acute way.
I totally agree. It's fantastic advice, and I think parents are going to relate to that well. And we're right out of time, but before we close, if we're already making parents unpopular, let's just give a couple more practical things. You talk about putting the computer in a public room, not locked away in kids' bedrooms, correct?
Right.
Well, then let's get a whole lot more unpopular. How early do you think parents ought to let their kids have smartphones or tablets?
How early?
Yep.
Well, that is all going to depend on how much they're willing to monitor them and how much they're willing to guard them. Certainly, and unmonitored and unfiltered internet access that they carry around with them. It's a portable device like that. I wouldn't even let my 18-year-old do that.
Luke, you just gave the perfect answer. You gave the answer I really hope people understand, because what we want is you shouldn't let them have it till age 16 or 17, or we want to cut and dried. And what you said is it depends on the parent. If you're going to be involved in your child's life, if you're going to monitor what they're looking at, if you're going to have accountability and filtering software placed on those devices, then as a parent, you have a better understanding of your child than I do. Better for you to answer that question. And if you're not going to monitor your child's phone usage or tablet usage or computer usage, and you still say you want to protect them, then maybe they shouldn't have it. That is a perfect answer. And that's why we called you. That's why we work with Covenant Eyes, because you're giving a real answer, and I can't thank you enough for all that you do. And I tell you what, we're going to be pointing listeners in your direction, because we're going to have a ton of links for resources, how to talk to your kids, all the things we've been talking about these past couple days on our website. So again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Ryan. I really appreciate it.
We'll do it again. And at drjamesdobson.org, click on the broadcast link and watch for more upcoming programs with Luke Gilkerson. This definitely is a topic we have to return to whether we want to or not. And while you're on our website checking out those related resources, consider a financial contribution to Family Talk. We are listener supported, and it's your donations that make it possible for us to bring practical programs like today's, tackling real world issues, to the families that need it most. You can give now at drjamesdobson.org, on our Facebook page, our smartphone app, or when you call 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825. We appreciate your support and for tuning in today. Join us again next time when we'll hear from two brave women who were relief workers in Afghanistan captured by the Taliban. Don't miss their exciting story next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.